Becatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Becatra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're tackling a really foundational text from Eastern philosophy. It's a book that's been consulted for, well, nearly 3,000 years by emperors, scholars, you name it, the I Ching, also known as the Book of Changes.
And Book of Changes really is the perfect name because the text, it doesn't give you static rules. It offers this incredibly comprehensive system for navigating the one thing we all face constantly, right? Mm-hmm. Change, transformation, uncertainty.
Exactly. I mean, think about the ambiguity we deal with every day. Big career choices, maybe a complicated relationship, or even just, you know, trying to understand a volatile market. We often feel like we need a compass.
Right, not a crystal ball. And that's the core challenge the I Ching addresses. It teaches that change, while it's always happening, isn't necessarily chaotic. It actually follows discernible patterns. Think about the seasons or the phases of the moon.
Okay, so there's an underlying order.
Precisely. And if you can start to perceive those patterns, you stop sort of fighting against the current. Instead, you learn how to work with it. It's about achieving harmony and effectiveness in a world that's always shifting. It's almost like a shortcut to strategic wisdom.
So who actually wrote this? If it's been around for millennia, it can't be just one person.
No, absolutely not. When we talk about the author of the I Ching, we're really talking about a layered masterpiece. It's accumulated wisdom, collected and refined over centuries, even millennia. It's this lineage, this sort of collective effort that gives the text so much weight.
Interesting. So it evolved. Who were the key figures in that evolution? How did this symbolic language come together?
Well, the tradition generally points to three main stages or layers. It starts way back with a legendary figure, Emperor Fuxi. He's credited with the initial breakthrough, discovering the foundational eight trigrams.
Those are the three-line symbols.
That's right. Broken and solid lines. Legend says Fuxi discerned these patterns just by observing nature. You know, the flow of water, the sky, mountains, wind. He basically created the core symbolic vocabulary.
Okay, so Fuxi lays the groundwork. Then what?
Then we move forward into the Zhou dynasty. This is where the symbols start turning into actual advice. King Wen of Zhou is credited with taking Fuxi's eight trigrams and arranging them into the full 64 hexagrams. Those are the six-line figures.
By stacking two trigrams together.
Exactly. And crucially, King Wen wrote the initial judgments for each hexagram, explaining the essence of that particular situation or archetype. Later, his son, the Duke of Zhou, added the specific line text advice for each of the six stages within a situation.
But the I Ching isn't just about getting advice, right? It's also seen as profound philosophy.
Right. And that transformation, that leap, really comes much later with Confucius and his school. Many people encounter the I Ching through their lens.
Ah, the ten wings.
Precisely. Confucius, or certainly his followers, wrote these extensive commentaries, the ten wings. This was a pivotal moment. The ten wings elevated the I Ching from what some might have seen primarily as a divination tool into a cornerstone of Chinese philosophy. They really emphasized ethical living, self-cultivation, understanding your place in the cosmos.
So it has this dual identity. It's an oracle you can consult, and it's a deep philosophical guide. How do those two roles work together? It seems almost contradictory.
Well, they're actually deeply linked because they share that core premise. The universe is in constant pattern change. When you consult the text, maybe using the traditional coin method or yarrow stalks, you're not trying to, like, predict a fixed future.
Okay. So what are you doing?
You're generating a symbol, one of those 64 hexagrams, that acts like a mirror. It reflects the current dynamics of the situation you're asking about, the pattern of the moment.
So it wouldn't tell me you're definitely going to get that promotion. It's more like...
right now, the energy surrounding this promotion opportunity is like hexagram X, which suggests, say, patience and careful preparation are needed. Or maybe the energy is like hexagram Y, indicating it's a ripe time for bold, decisive action. It maps the terrain.
Okay, that makes sense. The 64 hexagrams are like... archetypal situations, covering the whole range of human experience.
Exactly. You've got hexagrams for things like difficulty at the beginning, conflict, peace, standstill, the whole spectrum. And the ultimate goal of studying the text or consulting it is to develop what's called the sage mind.
Sage mind.
Yeah, the ability to perceive these underlying dynamics clearly, to understand the pattern you're in, and crucially, to act or not act at the appropriate time.
It sounds incredibly practical, actually, not just for, you know, ancient sages. The outline mentions its audience ranges from modern business leaders trying to figure out market trends to just individuals seeking personal balance.
Absolutely. It's endured because it speaks to that fundamental human need to navigate change wisely.
So to really get how it works, we need to understand the basic building blocks, right? The language it uses.
Yes. And that starts with the absolute core, yin and yang. Most people have seen the symbol, the circle with the black and white swirls.
Right, the Tai Chi too.
But the relationship between yin and yang is often, well, misunderstood. Let's clarify. Yang is represented by the solid line. It's the active, creative, initiating, bright, masculine force.
And yin is the broken line.
Correct. Yin is the receptive, yielding, nurturing, dark, feminine, passive force. But here's the crucial part. They aren't opposites in a moral sense, like good versus evil.
They're complementary.
Exactly. They're interdependent. You can't have one without the other. Think about it. A brilliant idea, Cure Yang, is useless without the receptive ground, the resources that support yin for it to actually manifest.
Okay. So wisdom comes from seeing how they interact.
Precisely. It's about understanding their dynamic dance. Which force is rising, which is falling, which needs to be emphasized in this situation, aligning yourself with that flow. These lines then combine to form the eight trigrams, which Fuji supposedly discovered.
Like the basic vocabulary.
You got it. For example, three solid yang lines form the trigram Qian, representing heaven or the creative, often seen as the father figure. Three broken yin lines form Kun, representing earth or the receptive, the mother figure. Others represent things like thunder, wind, water, fire, mountain, lake. They're fundamental forces or family roles.
And the real complexity, the full picture of a situation, comes from stacking two of these trigrams.
Yes. You take any two of the eight trigrams, one below, one above, and that combination creates one of the 64 hexagrams. If the trigrams are like single words expressing a core energy, the hexagrams are like full, complex sentences describing a dynamic scenario.
And these scenarios aren't static, right? They imply movement change.
Absolutely. The hexagrams often come in pairs or sequences, showing how one situation naturally evolves into another. Often it's opposite. It maps the cycles. Should we look at an example?
Yeah, let's. The outline contrasts two key ones, peace and standstill.
Okay, great examples. Let's start with hexagram 11, Tai, which means peace or harmony. This one is generally seen as highly auspicious, really positive.
What's the structure? What makes it peaceful?
In Tai, the lower trigram is heaven, Qian, yang, inherently rising, and the upper trigram is earth, kun, yin, inherently sinking. So you have this perfect intermingling. The creative energy rises up from below, the receptive energy descends from above, they meet, they communicate, creating harmony, flow, prosperity.
So if you get this hexagram when asking about a project,
it suggests the timing is excellent. It's a time for expansion, for connection, for things to come together smoothly. The cosmic energies are aligned for success.
Okay, that's the ideal. What about its opposite then, when things fall apart?
That leads us to hexagram 12, P, which means standstill or stagnation. It's the structural opposite of peace. Here, heaven is above and earth is below.
So the rising energy is on top and the sinking energy is on the bottom. They move away from each other.
Exactly. They separate. Communication breaks down. Things stagnate. Progress halts. This represents a time of decline, obstruction, or blockage. It's the natural cyclical counterpart to peace. After a peak, there's often a dip.
That sounds pretty negative. Does the book just say tough luck?
Not at all. This is where the wisdom comes in. The advice for peace standstill isn't to despair or to force things. It's typically to withdraw, to conserve energy, focus on inner integrity, strengthen your character, and wait patiently.
Because fighting it would be pointless.
It would be swimming against a very strong tide. The wisdom lies in recognizing the phase you're in. You can't force the conditions of Tai peace when the prevailing energy is P, standstill. You adapt, you endure, you prepare for the cycle to inevitably turn again.
And for more specific guidance within that situation, you'd look deeper at the individual lines.
Yes. The six-line texts offer nuanced advice depending on which stage of the situation is currently active or changing. And then the Ten Wings, the Confucian commentaries, provide that broader philosophical context explaining why this advice is sound, linking it to ethics and cosmic principles.
Okay, pulling back from the mechanics, what are the big overarching messages we can take away for, you know, everyday life? The outline highlights three. First one, proper timing and wu-wei.
Yes, wu-wei. This is such a key concept, and often misunderstood. It doesn't mean literally doing nothing, being passive or lazy.
Right. It's often translated as effortless action or non-striving.
Exactly. It means acting in alignment with the natural flow, the Tao, the inherent pattern of things. It's about knowing when to act and when to wait. Acting at the right moment allows for maximum effectiveness with minimum wasted effort.
I can see that in something like, say, launching a product. If you push it out before the market's ready or before your team is aligned, it's just struggle. You're forcing it. That feels like the opposite of Wu Wei.
That's a perfect example. That forcing creates friction, resistance. Mm-hmm. Wu Wei would be sensing the right moment, maybe, when the hexagram indicates tie piece, and then acting decisively. The power of the action is amplified by the correctness of the timing.
Okay, timely action. The second theme is about us internally. The cultivation of character embodied in the idea of the superior person.
Yes, the Junzi. Particularly for the Confucian interpreters, the I Ching. External success or navigating change effectively isn't just about clever strategy. It's fundamentally linked to your inner state.
So integrity, balance, self-awareness.
All of that. The Junzi, or superior person, uses the insights from the I Ching primarily for self-reflection, for understanding their own motives, for developing virtue. The idea is that enduring success and the ability to handle challenges gracefully flow from who you are fundamentally, not just from shrewd tactics.
That really shifts the focus. And the third theme sounds like it brings it all together, the dynamic balance of opposites.
This is maybe the most profound lesson for resilience. Nothing lasts forever. No state is permanent. Within the greatest success, the I Ching teaches, lie the hidden seeds of potential decline. So stay humble, stay vigilant.
And conversely.
And within the deepest difficulty, the darkest hour, lie the seeds of recovery and breakthrough. Understanding this constant dynamic fosters patience during tough times because you know it will change, and caution during good times because you know that also will change. It builds emotional balance.
The actual text, the lines themselves, are supposed to be quite poetic, right?
Memorable. Definitely. The language can be very evocative, very condensed. Take the first line of Hexagram 1, the creative. The creative works sublime success, furthering through perseverance.
Wow. Sublime success. It sounds like immense power.
It is. It represents pure yang energy, initiation, strength. But the key is furthering through perseverance. That raw power needs to be coupled with enduring character, with virtue, to manifest positively and lastingly. Power without integrity is fleeting or destructive.
And then its counterpart, Hexagram 2, the receptive.
The text says, the receptive brings about sublime success, furthering through the perseverance of a mare.
Perseverance of a mare. That's specific.
It highlights a different kind of strength, the strength of gentleness, loyalty, endurance, support, careful execution, yin power. It's showing that receptivity isn't weakness. It's a powerful, essential force that also requires its own kind of steadfastness to bring things to fruition. Two kinds of success, needing two complementary kinds of perseverance.
That's beautiful. And there's another quote emphasized, the superior man sets his person in order before he moves.
Yes. This speaks directly to that theme of character. It's fundamental strategic advice.
Right.
Before you launch the project, before you make the big decision, before you take external action, first look inward.
Check your motives. Ensure you're balanced, prepared.
Exactly. Inner alignment precedes effective outer action. Get your own house in order first. It's about readiness, clarity, and sound foundations.
So let's make this really concrete. How can someone listening right now apply these ancient ideas? What about, say, strategic decision-making, big life choices?
Well, instead of just listing pros and cons, you could use the I Ching's framework. Ask yourself, what's the underlying energy of this situation right now? Does it feel expansive, open, like a time for bold moves like tie piece? Or does it feel contracted, difficult, suggesting a need for patience, preparation, maybe consolidating resources like peace standstill or maybe calm the abysmal?
So it helps you diagnose the moment.
Right. Is this a time to push forward, yang, or a time to be receptive and wait, yin-yin? Aligning your action with the diagnosed season of the situation increases your chances of success and reduces struggle.
Okay. And in business and leadership, you mentioned Wu Wei earlier. How does that play out? Sounds counterintuitive for a leader.
It might seem so, but think of it this way. Instead of micromanaging every detail, a leader practicing Wu Wei focuses on creating the right conditions for success.
How so?
By hiring the right people, setting clear goals and ethical boundaries, providing resources, fostering a good culture, and then stepping back to let the talented team do their work. You create the fertile field, the receptive, where their creativity, the creative, can naturally flourish with less forced intervention. It's about enabling, not just directing. It also applies to understanding market cycles, knowing when it's a time for aggressive expansion versus consolidation.
And personally, for resilience and mental health.
I think the biggest benefit is perspective. So much anxiety comes from feeling trapped in a difficult situation, fearing it will never end. The I Ching fundamentally teaches that all situations are temporary phases in a larger cycle.
Like hexagram 12, stand still eventually turns back towards peace.
Exactly. Knowing that even the darkest time contains the seed of light that stagnation will eventually give way to movement can be incredibly hopeful. It reframes challenges not as permanent failures, but as necessary part of a natural process, giving you the strength to endure and look for the turning point.
Looking back at the material, what was the most surprising thing for you?
Honestly, it was the depth of the connection to synchronicity. This idea, which Carl Jung explored much later, that the seemingly random pattern you cast, with coins for instance, somehow meaningfully reflects the inner state of your question and the outer dynamics of the moment. It's profound.
It bridges the logical and the intuitive.
Yes. It suggests a hidden coherence between our inner world and the outer universe accessed through these symbols. It's not just philosophy. It implies a living connection, a symbolic key. That was quite striking.
Yeah, that is fascinating. For me, what I loved most was the core insight about wisdom itself. It's not about forcing your will on the world, trying to control everything. It's about understanding the currents, the flow.
The power of timeliness.
Exactly. Knowing when to act, when to yield, when to wait. That seems to be the absolute essence of wisdom, according to the I Ching. It makes you think, if you're facing a dilemma right now, maybe the best question isn't just, what should I do? But
what is the time asking of me right now?
Hey.
What phase are we in? Learning to read that rhythm, to flow with it, perhaps that's the greatest skill of all.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.